You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
No formula for finding a franchise quarterback, and never more apparent than what we've seen this year. I don't know what the Giants have in Daniel Jones. You know, sometimes you find a bargain, sometimes you waste a high draft pick. Giants used a high draft pick on Daniel Jones. I don't know if they wasted a high draft pick on Daniel Jones. And then you find a bargain like Tom Brady and the Patriots did back in the day. But one thing's for sure, it's an elusive task to find your franchise quarterback. Not that many teams get it right. The Bucs did get it right, and they're a contender, a Super Bowl contender. The Giants are in a different situation right now. They do play hard. They have to play hard because they're not a very good team. Daniel Jones has all the tools. He can run, throw, athleticism. Problem is, can't avoid turnovers. You can't play the position if you can't avoid turnovers. Just ask Jameis Winston. Last night, two costly interceptions in the two-point loss. And it has to be frustrating for Giants fans because you watch Daniel Jones forcing things that he doesn't have to. Tom Brady and the Buccaneers didn't play great last night, but Brady took care of the football. And sometimes that's the most important thing. And Jones is only in his second season, but the NFL is moving on quicker and quicker at this position. The fact that the Dolphins want to find out now if Tua Tagovailoa is their quarterback for the future should tell you everything, because they have the Texans draft pick this year. And if the Texans would somehow end up with the worst record in football, the second worst record in football, third or fourth, maybe there's a package deal. Maybe you go after Trevor Lawrence. This is how teams are thinking. You think you got your franchise quarterback, and you realize you don't. Chicago Bears thought they had their franchise quarterback, went up to get Mitchell Trubisky. The Bears, they've done this before. This was one of those glaring mistakes, and it's going to haunt them for a while. The Browns with Baker Mayfield, they don't know what they have with Baker Mayfield right now. But if you're trying to correct these mistakes and deliver on promise that the team saw in Daniel Jones when they drafted him in 2019, it better happen sooner, because later they're probably going to take a quarterback. If they're up there again, they probably will. McLevin, you got a poll question. This program brought to you by the great folks at the Breeders' Cup on NBC Sports this Friday and Saturday. The world's best thoroughbreds compete in 14 exhilarating races at the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Learn more at breederscup.com/2020. Catch all the action live on NBC Sports.
Okay, question of the day. If you're the Giants and let's say you have a top three pick, are you moving on from Daniel Jones? Sort of being discussed all throughout the media world.
Right now they would have the second pick overall, which means they'd have to decide on Daniel Jones or Justin Fields, or trade it down. Yeah, Paul.
Is the person who drafted Daniel Jones still employed by the New York Giants?
I don't think he's along for the ride.
Isn't that everything?
Dave Gettleman.
Because if he goes another quarterback, then he's admitting a mistake. If there's a new GM before the draft, I would assume he goes in his own direction.
I would think Gettleman, if he's still there, is staying with Daniel Jones. That would be my gut feeling. I don't know if you trade the pick. I don't know what's going to happen at the top of the draft. I don't know who's going to go all in and, you know, what it will take to get up to number two or number one. But if Dave Gettleman is still the GM, I don't think that he wants to give up on his quarterback. Yes, McLevin.
Do you think the Giants really stay around the 1-2 win thing, though? They're so close. I mean, they should have four wins now.
Well, being in the NFC East, it feels like they're going to accidentally pick up a couple of wins. And they might end up with four wins this year. You know, Jacksonville, Houston, obviously the Jets, Dallas, Washington. I mean, all of these, there's teams, but I don't think anybody's as worse off as the Jets are right now. The Giants play hard. Said that yesterday. They play hard. They could have taken this to overtime. And, you know, there's controversy at the end of the game. And Joe Judge, the Giants head coach, he makes sure that he compliments the official in a way, because he was critical. He was in an official's face after the no call. So they call pass interference on the two-point conversion with Deion Lewis and Antoine Winfield Jr. And here's Joe Judge after the game on the official making the right call.
Nate made the right call when he threw the flag. So I'm not sure why it got picked up. We had a pretty good view. I know they can't use a jumbotron for replay. We had a pretty clear view of that as well. But I thought Nate made the right call the first time. I thought, normally your first instinct is the right one. So
Nate is Nate Jones. He was the field judge. And then they huddle up. And there's no replay to look at. Like, they're just huddling up. That's where I think that the home office is in their ear to say, you know what, we're looking at this from about four different angles here, and I think we could pick up that flag. Let's go home. It was one of those, is it enough to overturn the call? That's what I thought it was bang, bang, and I understood. I wouldn't have called pass interference. I thought it was really, really close. If Winfield doesn't get his arm on the ball, then Deion Lewis probably catches it. He didn't have his, he wasn't even facing the quarterback. It was kind of blindly putting his, you know, arm out there. And he made contact with his body. To me, that's sort of part of jostling for position. And I'm not trying to, you know, hey, they threw a flag to bail out Daniel Jones. It was a bad throw. Like, he lacks anticipation. And he should have thrown that probably 2 seconds earlier. And it's not an issue there. And they go into overtime. I wouldn't have called it. I thought it was okay. But I think the NFL has to have, you know, complete transparency. The NFL, if you, you know, whenever there's doubt, just throw a flag. And then you let the home office help you here. And I think that's what's happening now. But I'm okay with getting the call right. I just, you know, these officials on the field, it feels like they're just going, just throw the flag. And then they wait. They huddle up. And then they wait for somebody to speak into their headset to say, you know what, you can pick that up. That's not pass interference. Or, hey, there was enough there. You know, let's let it stand. Yeah, McLovin.
Two questions. If Tom Brady had thrown that pass, would that flag have been picked up? And if there were fans in the crowd, 80,000 people screaming in that stadium, would they have picked it up?
I think those are both legitimate questions to ask. Brady probably gets the call. If the fans are there, the Giants probably get the call. You know, you got this antiseptic, this sterile environment there, and it's Daniel Jones, and it was a poorly thrown pass. And I think because of that, they gave Antoine Winfield a little more room there, that it was thrown, you know, back shoulder behind him. And I think that, you know, had he thrown it correctly, then there was no issue. He sort of made it a closer call by the fact that it was a bad pass. Yeah, Paul.
Did the Monday Night Football sound guy pump in fake sound of Giants fans booing when the call was overturned? I didn't hear that. Yeah. It was light. It was muted.
Yeah, I didn't hear that either. Did anybody think it was pass interference? McLovin, you would have let it stand. Okay.
I don't disagree with anything you said. It was super bang, bang. But I thought that his body got in the way. Like, that's what they call pass interference. It was a terrible throw, and the receiver was coming back, and he ran into the defender, basically. But that's kind of what pass interference is, but it was so bang bang.
The hands, that's always the great indicator for me. Where are your hands and what are they doing? And I thought that if he made contact with his chest and he didn't have his hand, he didn't hook him and he had his arm out. I mean, he got lucky because he deflected it. But if you want to play the conspiracy theory, if you're the NFL, don't you want overtime? Tom Brady in overtime against the Giants? So these people say, oh, you know what, they didn't want to give the call. You know, they didn't want to give the call to, or they wanted Brady to win. And I'm thinking, if I'm the NFL, I how many more commercial breaks do I get? 4 or 5 in overtime? Yeah, McLovin.
You were into the 11th. I think you might have been past the window on the East Coast, which was watching the Giants and the Bucks. But everyone was tweeting, oh, they want Tom in the Super Bowl. That was a popular Twitter conspiracy theory.
Well,
and that'd be great.
Anybody else think it was pass interference? No. And Jones made a bad pass. I think he because of that, it made it a little easier for the official to go, you know, Lewis is coming sort of back into him as well. And, you know, he was at least 1 second, 1.5, 2 seconds late in releasing that ball. He lacks that anticipation, and you see that where I'm waiting for you to be open. In the NFL, you throw it, and then they get open. It's not, you're open, I'm throwing. Because if you do it that way, he won't be open by the time you throw it. Yeah, McLovin.
One other thing. Remember that face guarding used to be called PI?
Yeah.
To me, I thought that was a big deal when he doesn't look at the ball, you usually throw a flag.
But he didn't face guard
right.
him.
Right, right. And they actually changed that. Face guarding is now legal. As long as you don't interfere, you can. I never understood. Real quick holding question. What is holding, and is it only when the defensive guy slips on the field that they call it? To me, I never understand holding.
You're talking about offensive holding.
Offensive holding on the line. It feels like the same block every time they just randomly decide to throw it. Or am I crazy?
Yeah, Paul.
Offensive holding is now only called when the defensive lineman kind of looks like he's been shot or pulled, or his jersey is completely being pulled from his body. Where we, if we could see it clearly at home without replay, that's when it gets called down, which is a great thing. Remember how much we complained about holding last year? They said no more.
Well, we complained, and then Brady complained, and then they stopped calling holding.
You put us together.
With Brady. Yeah. Yes. Pre-lawsuit. Yes, Seton.
Jason Pierre-Paul was able to get one of those calls last night where he's like running through the line, and then got, and all of a sudden it was like somebody yanked him back and went down, and they're like, I don't know if he was really hit quite that much, but it was the cell that really got it.
It's like the scene out of Platoon with Willem Dafoe at the very end of the movie when he gets shot. In slow motion. The Giants, though, in close games, man, they played four straight games decided by 4 points or less. They've lost three of those four. It's only the fifth time in their history they've had this kind of streak this long in a single season. So they are playing hard. They kept it close. And I thought it was saying more about the Buccaneers. I expected the Giants to be tough at home, believe it or not. You know, this is Brady at the Meadowlands, and I didn't think they looked crisp, anything, you know, out of the ordinary. I thought that it was like, okay, and you got to win these games, but they were very close to losing that game. Here is Tom Brady after the game.
The interceptions were huge for us, and then defense really helped us out getting a few interceptions, and then the touchdown to Gronk, he made a great catch because the ball got tipped at the line of scrimmage. He had great concentration on that, and then Mike's was an incredible catch. So those guys are making a lot of plays. We obviously didn't play the way we were capable tonight, but it's still good to go get a win.
And we'll talk to Tony Dungy about this, NBC Sports, the Hall of Fame coach. Yeah, Seton.
Just to piggyback off of Andrew's earlier thoughts,
yeah.
If Tom Brady wasn't the quarterback of Tampa Bay, mm-hmm. and this was a 1 o'clock game on Sunday, would mm-hmm. we be talking about this final play?
No. No. But we know what's at stake here with the Buccaneers.
With the Giants, I mean.
No, the Giants and Daniel Jones. Have you seen enough where you go, yep, Daniel Jones is our franchise quarterback? He's making mistakes that are normal, or this used to be normal, with younger quarterbacks. And he does have athleticism there. I don't know if you can teach him how not to force the ball and have some anticipation and not fumble. Like, these are really big issues. That's why Jameis Winston needed to go back to school, quarterbacking school. And that's what he's doing in New Orleans. Because I do think he's a starting quarterback in the NFL. I just don't think his approach sometimes is smart. You're forcing things, and you can't force it in the NFL. Brett Favre did it and made a Hall of Fame career out of it. Very, very few quarterbacks. And Brett Favre threw more interceptions than anybody in the history of the sport. You can't force it. And I think that what you saw with Daniel Jones last night, he was trying to make something happen. Yeah, Paul.
And Favre kind of reminds me of like Carson Wentz. We were talking about him yesterday. Carson Wentz has all the negatives that Favre had, but he doesn't have as many positives. He kind of did a couple years ago, and I know his team is not that good, his line's not that good, but Wentz and Favre had more upside, more consistent upside, it feels like, than Carson Wentz has, at least lately.
Yeah, that's another issue. You look at the Eagles with Carson Wentz. Where are they with Carson Wentz? Now, we're looking at the 49ers with Jimmy Garoppolo. Has Jimmy Garoppolo played his last down, you know, with the San Francisco 49ers? I don't know. But it feels like we're getting to those points, like Cam Newton. People wanted Cam to get an extension after week two. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, well, they only paid him $1 million. That's good. Patriots going to be in the market for a quarterback. Are the Eagles going to go with Jalen Hurts eventually? The Bears are going to go back to Mitchell Trubisky. That's why when we made this argument, or this argument kind of surfaced about who's more important to the Patriots and their success, Bill Belichick or Tom Brady? And I think I go back and forth, and then the more I think about it, the more I go, if you don't have a franchise quarterback, I don't care who your coach is. When you have that franchise quarterback, he will bail you out, because whatever you do prior to the game, in drafts and free agencies, this is the guy who has to make it happen on the field. Unless you have the steel curtain, the purple people eaters, the fearsome foursome, or the Ravens with Trent Dilfer as your quarterback. It's really hard to win that way, and especially now. And that's why I look at what Brady has done. Brady with the Buccaneers is going to be a difference maker, and they're going to be a Super Bowl contender. Brady in New England is still better than Cam Newton in New England for a variety of reasons. The biggest problem I have with the Patriots has been Bill Belichick's inability to draft. Look at the last couple of drafts. That's on Bill Belichick. And had he made a couple of good draft picks, then they wouldn't be in this position. They would have some skill position players. N'Keal Harry has been a bust. They did get Chandler Jones, which was a great draft pick. But look at Bill's drafts. That's the reason why they're in this situation. He talked about they went all in to win those Super Bowls. If you draft well at the end of the Ravens are the Ravens because they're great. They play in the postseason. They've won a Super Bowl. And they're able to get good draft picks late in the first round. Kansas City Chiefs, you get a good draft pick at the end of the first round. That's the difference. And I think Bill has done a terrible job with his draft picks the last 4 years. That's why they're in this position right now. All right, we'll take a break. Whoa! Yeah, it's fact. It is fact with, you know, who he's drafted. You know, they've done well. You know, they got some guys, you know, the McCourties and Stephon Gilmore. But this was about Brady keeping things together. At least in my opinion. Because Bill didn't do his job. Therefore, Tom didn't want to stay. There's no skill position players. If Tom has skill position players, Tom is probably still there because football would be fun to him in New England in spite of dealing with Bill Belichick. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Man, we have sped up the process of deciding if a quarterback can be a franchise quarterback. It's crazy. This maybe goes back to Josh Rosen, where you go, no, we're done. Let's bring in Kyler Murray. The Bears with Mitchell Trubisky waiting a little bit longer. The Browns with Baker Mayfield. The fact the Dolphins want to find out if Tua can play right now in case they get a really high draft pick. Yeah, McLevin.
Is that partly rookie salary cap and you can afford?
When you get that rookie salary at that position, that's where you can build around a quarterback. It can't be usually the other way around. He's the Hall of Fame coach, NBC Football Night in America, joining us on the program. Good to see you again, Tony. Let me start there. When did we start to speed up the process of when we evaluate a quarterback, whether he can be your franchise quarterback or not?
Well, I think it really has been in the last 10 years, maybe since I left, because I know that was a situation where you drafted a guy and you had to see. I went to Tampa in 1996. Trent Dilfer had been there 2 years. And Rich McKay, part of the deal was, hey, we've got to see if this number six pick in the draft can pan out. So you aren't going to be evaluated until we find that out. You're not going to be evaluated as a coach, but we've got to find out. And that was our game plan for 2 years. And it seems like we have left that. If I get a chance to pick another guy and this guy is a more solid franchise quarterback, let's go. You have to have a quarterback to win. There's no question about that. But some of these guys need some time, Dan, to progress.
But have you seen enough of Daniel Jones?
No, I haven't, because I see sometimes, like last night, where, gosh, you missed a couple of easy touchdown passes. You end up throwing interceptions when we had everything set up. But then I saw some other games. I saw last year he played a beautiful game against the Bucs and beat them. So you're going to have a little bit of that. Peyton Manning was, I think, 4 years in the league when we got there to Indianapolis, and he had a 500 record. So let's not say that, you know, in 2 years you're going to see everything you need to see.
That play at the end of the game, the call on the field, and then they picked up the flag. What would you have done?
I don't like that because John Perry said, well, pass interference has to be clear and obvious. Well, the official knew that when he threw the flag. He knows the rule for pass interference. So I have to see clear and obvious before I throw the flag. I throw it, and then someone else tells you, no, that's not really clear and obvious. the offensive pass interference on Toi Lolo was the same thing. Was that clear and obvious? No, we had a conversation about that. Same thing happened in the Green Bay Minnesota game. They picked up a flag that was clearly pass interference. It was thrown, and then somehow the flag gets picked up. So, no, I don't like those.
It feels like when in doubt, throw the flag and then let the home office of the NFL officials get in touch with you and say, you know what, pick the flag up, or no, that is pass interference. As a coach, do you have a problem if the officials on the field are probably not making the final decision on some of these calls?
I don't have a problem if it goes that way the whole time. If that's our system, let's do that. But the two bogus holding penalties that they had earlier in the game, letting the home office look at that and say, hey, you know what? That really wasn't holding. If we're going to do that on everything, great. But don't just do it on the last play of the game when five other plays could have made a difference as well. So if we're going to do it, let's do it all the time.
What kind of questions remain for the Buccaneers and Brady?
I think it's a matter of timing and just consistency and building that. You see, Tom looks so much more comfortable. He's got a better connection. My question is, we saw how long it took with Gronk. Gronk took a year off. And the first part of the season, what was everybody saying? Oh, Gronk's not the same. Tom doesn't have that with him. And now we're seeing that connection after 8 or 9 weeks. Antonio Brown has been off how many years? A year and a half? Now, how long is it going to take to get that connection with him? And everybody says, oh, yeah, he looks great and he's in shape. But Tom Brady is going to need to see him come out of routes. How is he going to run this route against this? What are we going to do? And so is it going to take another 6 weeks to get adjusted to Antonio Brown? I think they've got a great team right now. And I hope this kind of experiment with Antonio doesn't set that back a little bit.
Would you have brought him in?
I probably wouldn't have, because I would have wanted to hear some contrition first. Some, I'm sorry, and I'm different now, and I've changed. I believe in second chances. You know that, Dan. But I also believe people need to repent and say, you know what, I was wrong. So, yeah, what I did in New England, what I did in Oakland, what I did in Pittsburgh, that was wrong. What I've done, and I've been out, I've missed the game, and I want to come back, and I'm going to change. If I hear that, then I'm all for it. But I haven't heard that yet.
What team are you all in on right now?
Nobody. I think everybody has some issues. Rodney Harrison and I had this debate on Sunday night. Oh, Kansas City, you know, they're the team to beat. Well, Kansas City has some defensive issues as well. I love their offense and where they're going, but I see some of those things creep up. And Pittsburgh is undefeated, but we see leads being blown. I saw coverages where I couldn't understand what was happening. Nobody's around Willie Snead. And so that's not great. But then you see the plays that they make to make things happen. So, yeah, they've got a lot of talented guys. I love their receiving core now. I love Ben being in control. But they've got some issues. So I think that's just where we are. Fundamental football, time management, all those things we've lost that dealing with this pandemic and not practicing. So I think somebody's going to emerge here in the next few weeks. But we're still in that discovery phase, I think.
He's the Hall of Fame coach, Tony Dungy, on loan from NBC Football Night in America. It feels like the game is all about offense. You can't have too much offense. The Seahawks wanting to get more offense in there. Kansas City using their draft pick to get more offense in there. Is that where we are right now in the NFL, that, you know, can you build a defensive-minded team that is a Super Bowl contender?
I don't think in this salary cap era and the way you have to do it, there's not going to be a Legion of Boom that leads a team to a championship with defensive play. You're going to have some good defenders. You're going to have a defense that helps you win. But you got to have a quarterback. You got to have an offense that can score. And I think if I were coaching now, I would go down that road. Hey, I want Antonio Brown to add to my three other playmaking receivers, because the more I can score, the better off we're going to be. The rules say that. Everything lends itself to that. And when you have to decide how to spend your money, who you're going to pay, you need to pay those offensive guys, no doubt.
But when you had Peyton, did Peyton always want you to draft an offensive player?
No, not necessarily, but we did. But that's one of the things Bill Polian told me. We're always going to feed the monster. So you got on defense, you got to make it work. We've got to get guys like Robert Mathis in the fourth round who are great players, but it comes down the line. In the first round, I remember, boy, there was a mock draft and everybody's saying my second year there, we got to go defense. And Bill said, hey, Dallas Clark is going to help us win championships. We got to take him. We were number 27, 26 on defense, and we fed the monster and Joseph Addai. And we kept doing that. And we got enough offensive guys. We had to find the defensive guys, and we got some guys kind of under the radar, but offense was going to win it for us. And I think we're even farther along in that now, in this era.
What would you do with Jimmy Garoppolo if you're the 49ers?
I think I would stay with him. And he's played some games where, that stretch last year when they're as good as anybody in football, when they run the football and when they're playing defense, Jimmy Garoppolo is very good. And there's a lot of quarterbacks like that. So I've got one that I know can take me to a Super Bowl. I think I would stay with it. But you've got to have that core around him, no doubt.
But if you're Bill Belichick, would you at least inquire about trading Garoppolo back to New England?
No, because I think when you let him go, that told me something right there. If I thought Jimmy Garoppolo was the next Tom Brady, I'm not letting him go, no matter what anybody says or what happens. So that gave me a little buyer beware when they let him go. New England doesn't let good players just go for free. Hey, I'm going to do you a favor, San Francisco. Here's a really great quarterback. Good luck. No, he had some concerns, and I don't know what those were, but I think that ship has sailed.
Well, I don't think Tom wanted the competition there.
I don't know about that. Even if that's true, Bill Belichick doesn't care about people's feelings. Okay. And there's a lot of people that had suggestions for how they should do things, and Belichick is going to do it his way. And if he really thought, we'll make this work, Tom, if Jimmy Garoppolo is the heir apparent, he's the next guy. You're 40 years old. And I know that you've been with me and we've won all these Super Bowls, but this guy can get me to 5 more Super Bowls in the next 10 years. I think your feelings are going to have to get hurt, Tom.
How long do you stay with Cam Newton?
I think you ride it out this year. You built this around a running attack and all of those things. And this is the way you can win. Maybe you can turn it around and get it going. If not, you're not going to be able to go to Jared Stidham and all of a sudden turn this into a drop back.
But don't you need to find out if he can play, Tone, or do you think Belichick knows what he has in Jared Stidham?
I think he kind of understands that. Otherwise, he wouldn't have gone out to get Cam Newton.
I
think that, again, when you made that move, that told me, yeah, I like Jared Stidham, but I'm not sold on him yet.
And you had Edgerrin James, who's a Hall of Famer, but I wonder about that position as we move forward. You have to be pretty much a guy who can run but also catch the ball out of the backfield. Where do you place your priorities on your running back in the draft?
I think you look at what people have done. Look at San Francisco. If they can put Deebo Samuel back there and make yards and run the ball well. And you look at Kansas City, and gosh, we thought, oh, LeSean McCoy, and then he kind of got nicked up, and Damian Williams went in there, and now he's opted out, and what are we going to do? Oh, we'll draft Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And, we kind of went through that with Edgerrin. Bill Polian came to me, I'll never forget it, Dan. He said, we can pay Edgerrin. He deserves it. He's a great player. He's been the heart and soul of us. But if we sign him to what he is going to command, we're not going to be able to re-sign Reggie Wayne and Dallas Clark and Dwight Freeney. So the better way to go would be to let Edgerrin go. We'll draft a young running back. We'll get them at the rookie rate, and we're going to get Maurice Jones-Drew or Joseph Addai. And that's exactly what happened. So, I think that's the way you go down the road. You say, hey, if I'm Kansas City, yeah, I'd love to have that great back, but you know what? I'll get one. I'll get one in the draft.
Would you trade for J.J. Watt? Would you trade him if you're the Texans?
I might think about it now, depending on what I could get, because my season and next year is going to be a rebuilding year, and I don't have high draft choices. So as painful as it would be, and you're giving up a big-time playmaker, to recoup some of that and to be able to build my offense, I might have to think about it.
I don't know what he's worth. Like a second, maybe a third round pick? Do you even get that for J.J. Watt?
You might get a second. And somebody like Seattle, now they got Carlos Dunlap, but if J.J. Watt were dangling out there and you thought, man, I can get to the Super Bowl, that one guy who can rush the passer, maybe get that one sack in the NFC Championship game that I need, you'd think about that. We did that, Booger McFarland. We needed a run-stopping nose tackle. We had a lot of injuries up front. And we said, hey, second-round pick, I know Booger. He can fit in the system. And he played great for us and helped us win a Super Bowl. Was it worth the second-rounder? You bet it was.
It's great to talk to you again. Hope things are well with the family there. And my best to everybody on Football Night in America.
All right. Sounds good, DP. Always great to talk to you.
That's Tony Dungy.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Get out and vote, but be prepared to wait in line. Maybe longer than an hour. That was this morning's scene where I went to vote. A little over an hour. You know, it used to be, you just go in, walk in, you know, they look for your address, your name, and you're like, you know, you're on a fast pass at Disney World. This time around, I show up and I go, what are all those people around the building doing? And then all of a sudden, I go over to the wrong side, and a guy goes, hey, it's this way. And I don't think he's talking to me, because I'm thinking, there's never a line like this. You're over here. The line's over here. And then I keep walking. He goes, hey, SportsCenter guy, it's over here. And I go, oh, that's me. And then I go, oh, man, I don't know if I can get this done this morning.
He dropped SportsCenter guy on.
Yeah. And then I figured it was me. Because Van Pelt, he doesn't live there around there anymore. Yes, Pauline.
Did you guys notice, and I knew Kanye West was running for president, mm-hmm. but I thought it was more of like a thing that he did for a couple weeks. He was on the ballot.
Oh, yeah.
You guys saw him on the ballot?
Yeah.
I was pretty surprised because I didn't think he was following through with it.
No, he's following through.
I'm not telling you if I voted for him or not. I won't give
okay,
that information.
No,
I did see him on the ballot.
Vegas has prop bets.
And he was listed as from Wyoming.
Yes.
I did not know Kanye West was from Wyoming. I thought he's from Chicago.
Well, no, he lives there, or he's got a place there. He's got a compound there. But there's an over-under on how many votes he'll get this year. Vegas has an over-under on Kanye West. Like, does he get a million votes? Might be that's the over-under. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. He is the pride of the New Orleans Saints. He's Cameron Jordan, 5-time Pro Bowler, who joins us on the program. Who's got more Pro Bowls, you or your dad? Oh, I like that. You got your vote mask on today. I like that. That's an entrance there, Cameron. Who's got more Pro Bowls, you or your dad? Uh-oh. I think your mute button might be on. There you go.
I'm saying, absolutely. You know, I got to have my vote mask on. I'm saying my absentee ballot voted in last week. You know, check my verification ratio was in a couple days ago. I'm good. But in terms of the Pro Bowl process, you know, I like to say, the Jordan men, we have 11 Pro Bowls.
Let me hold on here, Cam, because I still got a bad connection here. So we'll see if we can rectify that. But it sounds a little hollow there, and we'll try to figure that out. By the way, 877-3DP-SHOW, and then I'm going to talk to Rich Eisen coming up here at the top of the hour. We wanted to have Rich on since he's a Michigan alum, get his thoughts on what's going on with Jim Harbaugh. They got a game against Indiana that's kind of sneaky, because Indiana is a whole lot better than what you think. And they already beat Penn State at home, and we thought we'd have Rich on and to talk some NFL stuff as well. Yes, Paul.
Poor Rich has to get worked up for the Indiana-Michigan game. Like, usually in his mind, historically, he could take a few weekends off where it was going to be a nice, easy win.
But I said this yesterday, if you're a Michigan fan, you'd rather lose to Ohio State, I think, than lose to Michigan State at home, because that is embarrassing. This is a Michigan State team that lost to Rutgers. Like, Ohio State, you sort of expect to lose to. But is Cam back with us? Let's try it again, Cam.
Can you hear me now?
Yay!
Is this better?
Yay!
And we back.
Okay, so your dad have more Pro Bowls than you?
Yeah. He's got six.
I keep saying, I was like, you know, in my household, we go about the Jordan men have 11 Pro Bowls. I've only got five. So, you know, I'm almost holding my weight, but at least we're double digits.
And your dad played tight end for the Vikings, Steve Jordan, for over a decade, I think.
Yeah, 13 seasons deep, 82 through 94. You talk about six Pro Bowls. Growing up, you just don't realize how great your dad is until, you know, high school, college.
Did you go into the locker room? Do you remember your first game you went to see?
Nah, I mean, I remember being super cold and in some sort of away game type situation where you're just miserable and you're just like, I just want to get out of here, get to the car. And, you know, the car door is frozen. The lock is frozen. So it's not what we call fond memories. I mean, I got more memories of running around the training facility and punching on big punching bags and, you know, whatever it is.
Now, your dad went to Brown. Did you ever consider going to Brown?
Not at all. nothing about the East Coast life is appeasing to a West Coast kid.
Oh, really?
Come on. I'm in Arizona. You know, we used to go into California all the time. Like, the best coast just is just a better way of life. You got like four seasons on the East Coast. I'm not even sure what that's about. My thickest piece of clothing is a sweater, you know, like that. It just doesn't go well. Sweats and shorts aren't going to get you through New York anything.
You got the game coming up Sunday night with the Buccaneers. How closely were you watching the game last night?
I did not. I did not. I'm not going to lie to you. I assumed that Tampa Bay was going to beat the Giants. I didn't realize it was going to be a close game like that.
You can't get anything out of a game like that? Like, that wouldn't be homework?
Oh, for sure. I'm gonna break down that film because they got after him. I mean, I saw the highlights. My kids won last night, so, you know, Monday became an upside-down magic off Disney Plus movie night instead of football.
That's good.
I got three kids. They win sometimes.
Yeah. When you go against Brady, like, is there any surprises?
No, I mean, he's the most, you know, probably the winningest quarterback that you're going to see in our era. You talk about six championship rings. That's undisputed. He's probably the second greatest quarterback of all time. Right.
Wow. Behind,
you know, Drew Brees.
Wow. Do you really think that Drew is
who's
a better
got more 5,000 yards season?
Do you think that Drew is a better quarterback than Tom?
Do I know that Drew is a better quarterback? last 10 years of my life tells me so.
That's being a good teammate. What do you expect out of Antonio Brown?
We all know Antonio Brown, when he hits the field, is special. Even in his, you know, limited playing time the last, you know, whatever, two seasons of whatever was going on, he showed up and showed out at the Patriots when he played. So we know he is a special talent when he takes the field. That's something that we'll be prepped for. It's not like they already didn't have a potent offense to begin with. What's another piece? It seems like every week they're adding more pieces, right?
Do you know him?
Yeah. I mean, I hate to say it, but we share the same birthday. And I always say I hate to say it because I hate to share my birthday with anybody. I don't really. I think it doesn't work that way, Cam.
Like, there's a lot of people in the world.
I hear you, but I've got friends that have my birthday, and I either congratulate them on the 9th or the 11th.
Not on the 10th.
Yeah. I'm like, hey, man, happy early birthday. And I will not tell you the 10th is my day. Like, they'll text me, happy birthday, Cam. I'm like, appreciate it. And then the next day, I'm like, hey, same to you. Happy belated. I'm selfish. Sorry.
How would you sum up this season?
The season for the Saints, the season in NFL, the season because of COVID. That's an open question right there. But the season for the Saints, we're trending upwards. I mean, sitting at where we were, sitting at 5-2, you know, after going 1-2, it's something that we're fighting. We're fighting each and every week to try and trend upwards. We've got a lot of things to overcome, and we're still cleaning up some things. But I like the way we're playing right now.
Do you have a list, whether you actually have one or in your mind, of quarterbacks you've sacked or haven't sacked?
No, not at all. All I care about is that win column. Personal accolades, I worry about in the offseason after we get done winning. During season, all I care about is trying to get a Super Bowl. As you said, you know, me and Pop's got 11 Pro Bowls, 23 years of NFL experience between us now. We have no Super Bowls. I'm just trying to win.
Have you sacked Brady?
Yes. Look for verbal confirmation. Yes.
So it wasn't memorable then?
I mean, not at all. I remember my first sack, and I remember my last sack.
Who's the toughest guy to bring down?
I mean, I thought that clearly it's Cam Newton. Cam Newton in his whole Carolina Panthers career. he's bigger. What he's big as they're gonna get, fast as they're gonna get. There is probably no other quarterback that's as hard to take down, especially when he's rolling. Ben Roethlisberger is huge. You know, Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson might be my white buffalo. I don't think I've sacked him now that I think about it. But I mean, Russell Wilson is fast. Lamar Jackson is fast. But Cam Newton has all of it.
Do any of these guys talk to you?
Do I talk to them? Absolutely. Do they talk back? No. I mean,
but who are you talking? But what are you trying to get out of them?
Or I'm just trying to rile the feathers up. You know, like at some point you're just looking like how can I try and affect them? But they know, like, if you're the face of the franchise, you're getting compensated well. You're probably playing well, and you know, one sack or two sacks, three sacks, you know, down the line, four sacks, call it. You know, all you're going to do is start talking to your offensive lineman. You're not even going to talk to the defensive end after. Like, I try to get chippy. And at this point, I realize quarterbacks are just good people.
Would you rather face a rookie tackle or a rookie quarterback?
I'd rather face a quarterback who's going to sit in the pocket and pat that ball a couple of times and make smart decisions, you know, make the smart decisions, not just the first decision. You got rookie quarterbacks who come in and know how to air it out and get the ball out of their hands fast. I'd rather have a quarterback sit at 9 yards and try and get to their second or third read.
Ever come close to hitting Breeze?
In practice?
Yeah.
A couple times. I doubt I'll ever get that chance to actually sack Drew. It hurts. It hurts. Like, I mean, we talk about it in practice. I'm like, that would have been one. No, Cam, I would have got out of there. I need the validity. I'm like, I just need to fold you one time. Like, but it's okay. That's
what,
my guy.
What the heck is going on with Michael Thomas? Is he playing Sunday night?
That's a Michael Thomas question. I'm not saying it's above my pay grade, but that's coming from a higher spot than where I'm sitting.
Do you expect him to play Sunday night?
I expect Mike T to play whenever he's told that he will be playing. In terms of what Mike T brings to the game, I can't wait till he gets back to being playing. In my mind, you know, I hope
it's Emmanuel the PR staff cool. Next to you, Cameron.
No.
Can you just ask him? Just say, hey, is Michael Thomas going to play this weekend? Just ask him right
he's
now.
He's not even looking at me. He's not even looking at me.
Yeah, but you can. Right now, so. You can get his attention.
He's not coming up out of there. At this point, you know, when Mike T takes the field, just know he's gonna be right enough to take over.
All right. What are you doing with your new foundation?
The God is Love Foundation. I mean, we're in so many different things. You know, we talk about hurricane season and how it's affected Louisiana. From Delta to Laura to now, you know, Zeta that just passed through New Orleans. I mean, I saw the eye of a hurricane, you know, last week with my kids. You know, we went outside and was like, hey, this is the eye of a hurricane. Apparently, it's only happened like four times in the last 100 years in New Orleans. So we saw that and then went back inside. But how many people are affected by these hurricanes? So we started up a little fund with United Way to get money out to Lake Charles and the affected areas. And honestly, you know, we've got a couple of things in the works now with the city of New Orleans, which will be unveiled probably in the next month or so. And we've gone through tech funds, we've gone through, you know, diaper funds. This COVID has affected so many people throughout our nation, throughout the world at this point. But controlling what you can't control, trying to affect what you can't affect. My city of New Orleans, you know, I'm always looking and trying to do something for them.
Yeah, Youth Empowerment Project, a mentorship program in New Orleans. It's called Cam Jordan's Dream Builders Fund. You also got a podcast with Mark Ingram?
Hey, no better person to have some fun with than your brother. You know, we came into the Saints together. We played 8 years deep together. And that's my brother from another. It's like, you know, we blood, but we not blood. That's my guy.
He's funny. So he's a character.
Hey, we started it up. And I mean, we just started calling friends around the league and just had a blast for a few episodes. And we're releasing, you know, every Wednesday. We'll drop one tomorrow. Because today is important for voting. And that's what I need everybody to focus on, voting. Tomorrow we'll have more fun.
You going to run for office one day?
Office of politics? Being a dad of three, almost four now? Yes.
That's it.
I'm going to have a soccer van, a mom soccer van, which in my mind is escalating now. Wifey said she was beyond the soccer van, so she's got to escalate. So I was like, I'll take that over when, you know, I retire, babe.
I like it.
And then whatever it takes to. But at this point, I feel like I've got about 5 years left of football, and I got to make each one of these years count.
I got you. You know how many sacks you have?
89 and a half regular season, another 5.5 playoffs.
But you don't keep track of your sacks, huh?
No. I'm not. I think that's really my problem is this year is the first year where I've been like, I'm actually within my goals reach. Normally I worry about, you know, sack totals, all that other stuff after season. And I'm getting back to that mentality. Because when you think about like that grand picture, like I'm this close to 100 sacks, like 100 sacks is such a marquee note, a goal that you can actually capitalize and realize upon. It takes away from, you know, it sort of takes away sort of your focus just a little bit, just in terms of how thirsty you get during a game. Like, I need this sack. Like, I need the sack. I need the sack. And then instead of letting the sacks present themselves,
you got five Pro Bowls. If you get a couple more Pro Bowls and you get over 100 sacks, you get 115, 120 sacks. Now all of a sudden, you're kind of knocking on the door of Canton.
I'm probably knocking on the door of Canton now. But that's not on me. That's not on me. That's on, you know, whoever whoever goes ahead and decides that.
You think you're a Hall of Famer right now?
I always think in my mind that I come out to be the best all around defensive end in the game. And I think I've proven that over the last 5 years or so. It's not the sacks. It's not, you know, just playing the pass. I play the run. I play the pass. And I play second down, too. I want to play all – if there's 78 snaps in a game, all the snaps in a game. I want to be the best every play, every game that I take the field on.
It's great to catch up with you again. We always appreciate it. Thanks for joining us. Have fun against Brady and the Buccaneers.
Hey, appreciate it. Hey, all we got to do is get 1% better every day, trending upwards. That's all we care about.
That's Cameron Jordan.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
We bring in Rich Eisen here. Do you think anybody, big names, get traded today?
I don't think so, Dan. If I had to choose a big name that should get traded today, it should be Cam to the Dallas Cowboys. That would be something that if I was Dallas, I'd kick the tires on. But I just don't see anything like that. There's no fantasy football trade in our future over the next 10 hours, I don't think.
If you're J.J. Watt, would you ask to be traded without going to the media?
Yeah. Right.
Would you ask behind the scenes?
I don't think so. I don't know. I don't profess to know exactly what's in his head. I think he loves that city. I think he loves that town. To answer your poll question, I would take Seattle if I were him. I know, obviously, Packers is his childhood team. But to me, Seattle is exactly what is exactly what he would plug into. You know, obviously, when we're looking at a post-pandemic, I've never been in a place where somebody's defensive play is directly plugged into the fans and how it actually turns into a momentum changing play, quite like Seattle. I've never really seen anything quite like it. And the only thing that comes close to it is when JJ Watt makes a play in Houston. I think it would be a perfect, perfect match. It's exactly what they need. You even heard, you know, Collinsworth say a couple of Sunday nights ago that where's the pass rush? This is exactly what this team needs. They need the pass rush. Carlos Dunlap, maybe. A factor, but I would love to see that marriage with J.J. Watt in Seattle.
I mentioned this to Peter King yesterday. I said the longer the season goes on, the less I know, because we have all these injuries. You're not quite sure if teams are going to be able to play when they're supposed to play each weekend. This has been one big question mark. I don't know who is great. I don't know who is really good. I don't know. I know who's bad. Your Jets.
Well, Dan, I thought you were soft pedaling all these NFL questions to, you know, get me talking, soften me up for the Michigan haymaker that you from Ohio are about to deliver. I see it coming. I understand you don't normally telegraph your punches, but I definitely have seen you at work for a quarter century and know your style. So this is an interesting way to soften me up.
Yes.
But yes, the Jets stink on ice, to use the phrase that I heard quite a bit growing up in New York City. They are terrible. They have broken Sam Darnold. They should sit him. I when I heard that they were giving him an MRI on his shoulder that was so hurt in the game in Denver that he came back into the game after leaving it, only to have the Jets even down two scores against Denver, shoehorn in another dumbass personal foul penalty, just enough to get Darnold back on the field for three useless snaps. I thought that they could use this MRI as cover to sit him down and start Flacco the rest of the year, because as you pointed out, in your third hour preamble that there are teams on their heels with one win that could absolutely use Trevor Lawrence and would absolutely turn their current starter into Josh Rosen, to continue the analogy, for Trevor Lawrence. And the Jets should do that right now. They should say to Sam Darnold, you are great. I think I heard you driving in today to the show here. I think Pittsburgh would be an amazing spot for him if Jimmy G is, in fact, maybe banged up to the point where the Niners would want to move on. I think he would be great there, too. And the Jets should send him packing and give him what he deserves, which is a real opportunity in a franchise that can handle it for him, and go get Trevor Lawrence.
Would you rather the Jets didn't win a game the rest of the season, or they won four?
Yes. Oh, I didn't stutter. I don't want to see them win a game the rest of the season. Oh, God, no. What's the point? What is the absolute point? So you could feel good about yourself?
Well, they did that last year.
Momentum?
They screwed up last year.
Right. Well, but there was no Trevor Lawrence in their offing, or even, you know, this year's top three picks in the offing, really, when they started beginning to win again. Right. I mean, there was nothing like that. So right now they're in a great spot. This kid is ridiculously special, and he would be amazing in New York City. All the people saying, you know, he should stay in school and tell the Jets I'm not coming. The Jets can basically tell him at the combine, you know, we got this coach. You tell Bieniemy to bring Andy Reid's playbook with him, or go for it. It's anybody. And it's the Jets' only opportunity to get a coach who would want to come to this franchise. It's a perfect situation that they cannot screw up with a single win over the next 8 weeks, Dan.
He's Rich Eisen, the Rich Eisen Show. You can find it on Peacock right after this show. And, of course, he is the NFL Network host. Which should extend or expand playoffs just for this season, college football or the NFL?
College football, right now. I don't understand why they don't do it. This is a perfect opportunity for whatever politics has been preventing them from doing the right thing. An 18 playoff is what we should see every year, Dan. I mean, you know, there's a team that's fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth that has an opportunity to catch fire. We also know that there's a team that could be fifth or sixth that deserves to be in the top four. You know, you're already seeing now, you know, I'm sure you're talking about the Clemson-Notre Dame game that's on NBC this weekend. That you're already hearing, like, well, Notre Dame beats Clemson. Well, you didn't have Trevor Lawrence playing. Well, Clemson beat Notre Dame. Well, Notre Dame couldn't do it even without Trevor Lawrence. Like, it's going to be cut either way. That is kind of a no-win situation for Notre Dame. And we should remove, I know it adds a certain drama to this weekend because there's only four teams, but expanding it to eight, see how it goes. I think baseball showed the expanded playoffs were entertaining this year. Yeah. And it had a March Madness type feel when it was a first pitch at one, and then it kept cascading all the way throughout the day for like four straight days. I think college football should attempt it.
Since this is the day to vote, you being a Michigan alum, and you had to vote.
Oh, wow.
Jim Harbaugh at the end of the year.
Oh, my God.
You say, hey, let's re-sign him, or we say, thank you, nice parting gifts.
This is the way you're framing the question.
Yes, I am.
This is the framing question. So I'm at the polling place.
Yes,
that doesn't
are.
Exist. And the item, the referendum on the
you have your lever. Pull it.
Do I say what?
Do you want Harbaugh to stay or go?
Yes, I want him to stay. How does that sound? I know it has not been at all a successful run in terms of national championships and Big Ten championships and beating Ohio State. I understand.
Other than that.
It looks bad. It looks bad. And it is frustrating. It's very, very frustrating to go through Saturdays like this. It's painful.
You lost to Michigan State at home.
I'm very well aware. That Michigan State team that turned it over seven times against Rutgers did not show up in Ann Arbor on Saturday, Dan. I mean, let's be honest. They played mistake-free football, which is kudos to them in playing a rivalry game that I wish my school had won in a manner that we saw Michigan State pull it together.
Okay.
And you can blame the coach, but who am I hiring? Who am I hiring? Am I hiring PJ Fleck? I'm hiring Matt Campbell. I mean, who am I hiring just for the sake of it hasn't worked out with one of those boys and is my first quarterback to
You can't find a quarterback. When's the last time Michigan had a truly dangerous, impressive first-round talent quarterback?
I think they have one right now, actually.
Oh,
I really do.
I think he's living
I really do. No. I really do, but it's also his second start. That's the problem. Like, to me, the question I'm going to have, and I already have, is why didn't this kid have any run last year? Certainly when Shea Patterson was having those two back-breaking turnovers per game that Michigan couldn't afford. You know, I know everyone wants blood, but honestly, who would I hire? I'll flip it to you. Like, who should Michigan get?
But are you satisfied if this is going to be status quo? Because it's been status quo.
No, I'm not. I'm not satisfied. I'm not satisfied.
Like 9-3 is, you know, that's nice for a lot of colleges. But
I know I am not satisfied. I do not like every single time Michigan plays that I have a pit in my stomach and I look down at my text and I see every Ohio State friend of mine giving me like the googly eyes emoji. Like, are you seeing this? Like, yes, I am seeing this. I am watching this. It stinks. It is not a lot of fun. And I, you know, and I don't understand how Michigan is actually favored at Indiana. And I heard again driving in today, you called that a sneaky game. It is not sneaky. It's not sneaking up on me. It's not in my rearview mirror. It's right in front of me. I saw how they have played. They are inspired. This is going to be again one of their Super Bowls. And Michigan does not play every week as if the opponent is playing them in their Super Bowl. And you can chalk that up to coaching. I just don't know who the alternative is. Who's the person that I am hiring?
Fritzy almost texted you on Saturday. And I said, and so he texted me to say, should I text Rich? And I go, no. Don't. We've done that once before.
I appreciate you being the human shield for Fritzy's inanities. I appreciate that, Dan. At what point, Fritz, were you thinking about texting me? Was it right when it was on the line, when Michigan needed to score in that 2-minute drive that took 19 hours for them to actually pull off? When was it?
I was just going to check in with you like Sunday night after the Broncos pulled off that comeback over the Chargers so you couldn't get back at me about Denver. And once they got that last second touchdown, then I was
I wouldn't. First of all, Todd, I don't take any enjoyment in anything that you find distressing. The only person I do that with is McLovin. And I love going back at him on his tweets that make no sense, like, how many Super Bowls have actually had Pro Bowl wide receivers on them? Not many. That means wide receivers don't mean anything, as if all pro, all pro wide receivers, as if that is the only metric by which a quality receiver is measured in being a championship quality. Like Tyreek Hill, the only guy who could make that route in the Super Bowl last year look as beautiful as it did.
Yes, McLovin.
He wasn't a pro. It was an all pro.
Yes, McLovin.
It was an all pro.
I know a team that could use some all pro receivers, and they play in Ann Arbor. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Here's what I will handle. I will handle Dan giving me crap because it literally we are working on our second quarter century of that right now. So I can handle that, especially with him from the state of Ohio. Deep down, Dan, I don't. You do enjoy Michigan's misery, right? Deep down, the Ohio,
no,
the Buckeye in you.
Like I used to. I felt sorry for Michigan when I was at the Ohio State game a couple of years ago. Like, I felt sorry for them.
Which one was that? The 60 burger or the one with the fourth down that JT Barrett did not actually get?
No, it was the 60 points they gave up. I felt sorry for them. I want it to be a rivalry.
No, I would. So would I.
Okay, so what hurt more? Michigan State? Or if you lost to Ohio State? Or the Michigan State loss? What hurts more?
Oh, Ohio State. Are you
no,
kidding me?
No, you should expect to lose to Ohio State.
No, we don't expect. No, no, no.
You should.
We should not.
Yes,
no,
Michigan State. You lost to Michigan State at home.
It's not. I'm, again, aware of
your
that.
Your little
and I'm
brother.
Willing to take it from you.
Your little
I will
brother.
Not take it, I will not take it from an Ivy Leaguer in college football. I will not accept that.
Okay.
This aggression will not stand, Dan. It will not.
Paulie, do you have a question for Isaac?
Rich, are you
this
glad you came on?
Is Seton there today?
Are you glad you came on?
Who wants a piece of it?
Are you glad you came on?
Of course.
Okay.
I always enjoy this.
Seton, do you have a question for Rich Eisen?
No, I'll let him go.
Okay. All right.
No. His awesome wife does the voiceovers for my program. So we're a Seton-friendly family. So but does Paul, you got nothing? Nobody?
I'm just glad you came on, Rich. Good to have you back.
who's yes, McLovin.
Does Rich know that Rutgers beat Michigan State? I just wanted to make sure that that was on the...
Yeah, he did mention that. Yeah, he did mention that. Who's on the show coming up?
We have today Malcolm Jenkins, who is going to be covering Antonio Brown. Rick Stroud to talk about the Bucs victory and taking on the Saints. Scott Bioli for a little bit of a conversation for trade deadline. And Ron Rivera, Riverboat Ron, will be on
awesome.
Today.
Awesome. Tell everybody in the building we said hello. Is anybody left in the building?
Everybody, we're socially distant. Okay. There's not many people left here, but we're here, and I look forward to being on after your show, Dan.
Thank you, buddy. That's Rich Eisen. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.